States versus Price and others. Mr. Woloshansky?
Yes. Good morning,
Your Honors. I'm Alex Woloshansky. I'm here on behalf of Teron Price. And yes, this too is a Booker issue. My client was convicted in a March 2003 trial of conspiracy to distribute cocaine base with others, and a sentence on October the 8th, 2003. He received life on count one, the conspiracy charge. He received 48 months on count 29, the telephone count. And we argue, first of all, that certainly Blakely does apply. This case was on direct appeal when Blakely was decided. We were asked to provide supplemental briefs after Booker was decided by the Supreme Court. And the issues here are that certainly this case should be remanded for resentencing because sentencing was based on the trial court's fact-finding issues. There was a base-level offense of 32. This would have called for a sentence range of anywhere from 168 to 210 months, if I'm not mistaken. He got life. These other factors, gun enhancement and relevant conduct, are the issues and the enhancements that raised the sentence to that level. There's another factor here today. There was a case decided by this court February the 11th, 2005, United States versus Edwards. Edwards, this court indicated that cocaine base, while that all crack cocaine is cocaine base, but not all cocaine base is crack cocaine. The verdict in this case was 50 grams or more of cocaine base. It did not say anything about crack cocaine. Now, obviously, had it been crack cocaine, there would have been a 10-year minimum under 21 U.S.C. 841B. Now, I believe, in light of Edwards, if there is any opportunity whatsoever to convince the trial court, which I believe will have a remand here, that maybe he should depart downward from even less than the 168-month level that is now advisory under the guidelines. So he doesn't have to give him at least 10 years. So we're asking this court to remand back to the trial court for resentencing with some guidance and to include that the trial court would not be bound by any 10-year mandatory minimum under Section 841B. And also, obviously, this sentence, according to Blakely, when it is remanded, I hope it is, should be based only on factors found to exist by that trial court jury beyond a reasonable doubt. There was some suggestion that perhaps a by the government that a new jury should be impaneled for the purpose of hearing sentencing issues. I did some research. I don't see any provisions in the federal court code for doing such an advisory jury for this sentencing purpose. I know it's been bandied about in our district more than once, but I don't think that's appropriate.
Well, it's bandied about here, too, so don't get all steamed about it.
All right, all right. And so I believe that it's really kind of ironic. There was two sets of trials in this case. The first set was a group of individuals belonging to the same conspiracy. Their convictions were affirmed prior to Blakely, and they got the sentences under the old guidelines. My client and the others were very fortunate in the sense that their appeals came through, and they did.
The only issue that you raised in this case is the sentencing, if I recall.
We raised the sentencing. We also raised the issue in count 29 about whether or not the government had the trial court had properly issued the wiretap order, because we felt that as to the phone number that resulted in the recording convicting my client of that offense, there had been no showing of necessity. There was showing necessity to prior orders, but none as to the phone number that we had. So we asked the court to consider that, but that's in the brief.
What happened to Suggs?
Suggs was a co-defendant, but he was in the first trial.
What happened to him?
He got life. Life plus.
Life too?
I'm sure. I believe he got life. He wasn't part of our case, but he was in the prior case.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wallace.
Thank you.
Mr. Bosch?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. After a 7-day trial and
approximately you want to stand in front of
I'm sorry. In approximately 12 hours of deliberations, my client was found guilty of two substantive counts
Who
of dealing.
Who is your client?
Davison. He was found guilty of two substantive counts of dealing cocaine. However, he was acquitted of the conspiracy. The two substantive counts were a total of 1.47 grams. The first pre-sentence report that came out under relevant conduct put my client in a guideline range of 63 to 78 months. After the
Are we just going to hear Booker issues? Do you have any? You have any other complaint?
No other complaint.
Just the Booker.
Just the Booker.
Davis. Okay.
The government objected. A revised pre-sentence report was issued, and at sentencing, the court found my client, by a preponderance of the evidence, was responsible, was in fact a member of the conspiracy that he had been acquitted of, and that he was responsible for over 1.5 kilograms of crack cocaine, or 1,500 grams, or 1,020 times as much as the jury had found him guilty of. The government says the Supreme Court has overturned that portion of Booker that sentencing factors that increase the base offense level must be proved to the jury beyond a reasonable doubt. I see the Supreme Court said only that this court was affirmed. The government says there's nothing to show that my client, Mr. Davison, would have received a sentence below 292 months in the applicable range. The government misses our point. The applicable range for Mr. Davison is 27 to 33 months. The government also raises the plain error issue.
I'm sorry. The range is 27 to 33 months, and he got 200.
He got 360.
360 months?
Correct.
And what part of that could the judge, what part of that was required by statute?
The minimum was 292 months.
So your concern is the extra
Correct.
68 months?
The extra, no. What I'm saying is it was a judge-found fact that got him in the 292 to 365 category. The jury found him in a range that would have been 27 to 33 months. Mm-hmm. There was a plain error issue raised by the government. We think that this is, in fact, plain error. All four prongs have been adequately addressed. On remand, if we get a remand, and I hope and believe that we should, there have been issues about sentencing juries. I would contend for Mr. Davison that a sentencing jury would be inappropriate because the jury has already found him not guilty of the conspiracy. We're happy to get sentenced in the range in which he should have been placed.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing further, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bosch. Mr. Finn?
I would like to talk about the trial. And not sentencing on behalf of Mr. Dilworth. There was a lot of evidence at trial that was offered by the government and admitted by the court to show that a conspiracy existed and that Mr. Dilworth was part of that conspiracy. In our brief, we've grouped the evidence that we believe is irrelevant, and if slightly relevant than highly prejudicial into seven groups. And I'd like to just talk about some of that evidence right now. The first group of evidence is evidence that was seized from a resident belonging to the parents of one of the co-defendants. Actually, it was Bobby Suggs and Shante Suggs, the brothers that allegedly headed the conspiracy that the government tried to connect with Terrence Dilworth. Now, there were guns, photographs, an intelligence alert, which was a document produced by the Gary Police Department, that were taken from this home. The problem with that is that the government did not connect this evidence in any way.
So is your argument this was irrelevant under 402, or that it was prejudicial or confusing and barred by Rule 403, or what? I'm not clear.
We believe that it was irrelevant because it had no connection to the conspiracy.
If but there was evidence that connected it to the conspiracy.
Well, if they...
What do you think the intelligence alert was that didn't connect it to the conspiracy? I don't understand.
Well, the intelligence alert was, I guess they had, there was a police officer that testified that this was a document that was not for not available to the public.
Yeah, but why do you say it's irrelevant? So,
well, I don't believe it has any tendency to make more probable or less probable the issue that a conspiracy exists.
Well, these guys have this police document. Why do they have it?
Well, there could be... Well, the problem, I believe, that makes it irrelevant is that it's not these guys. It's the parents of one of the guys. And that's what makes it irrelevant. If they had gotten the document from one of the conspirators, it probably would be relevant. But because these people are not alleged to be members of this conspiracy...
So what are they doing with this intelligence alert?
I don't know, Judge. But if it is relevant, and if it is found probative... I think that the inflammatory nature of it outweighs that probativeness. I don't know that, there wasn't a balancing issue at trial as far as that went, but if there were a balancing to take place, I think it would have to, the thing that would have to be taken into consideration is where the evidence was seized from. And because there's no, along with the guns too, and there was a lot of other material that was taken from different places that weren't really connected up with the conspiracy. But the jury saw all this material, and the jury was left to believe that it was relevant and probative in this case. And that's just one example. The other issue I have, and I just want to touch briefly on that, is there was a Brady violation that we think occurred in this case, and that has to do with one of the witnesses for the state, or I'm sorry, for the government. This was a person who really was the only witness the government came up with who wasn't really connected, wasn't a member of this conspiracy, and wasn't, given a deal. Now, at trial, that's the way he was presented. At sentencing, the agent that worked with this individual revealed that it was possible that he may have not been charged because of his cooperation. But
the government says he wasn't given a deal.
But it's contradictory to what the agent says at the sentencing hearing, which was that he was present and he remembers or seems to recall that the counsel for the government.
No, you said it might have happened, but the government says it didn't happen. Now, what effort did you make to get to the bottom of this, see whether he was offered a deal?
Well, other than the efforts at trial that were made and then to try to clear it up with further questions at sentencing, none. If there's no other questions, I submit.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Finn. Mr. Holler? See, I don't want to be a fusspot, but, counsel who are giving oral argument is supposed to sit at the counsel's table, not in the audience section. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. May it please the court. I know there are a number of different issues that have been raised in this case. I guess starting with the conviction issues, we believe that all of the evidence that was admitted in this case was validly admitted by the district court, that it didn't abuse its discretion.
Questionable. So you play this, the poll, what is it, poll camera or something?
Yes, the poll camera.
You play 6 minutes out of 2,000 hours. So 2,000 hours, 120,000 minutes, and you play six of them. Well, what is that supposed to show?
Your Honor, the poll camera evidence was intended to show that there was drug activity occurring on the hill.
6 minutes out of 120,000. What does that show?
Well, I don't think we wanted
probably
to show all.
Probably put a poll camera in a lot of places. You'll see that. Wait long enough.
Well, it may not have been especially relevant. But
well,
the question
is... It's piling on. I don't see any basis for it at all.
Well, I don't know that
it... And some of the rap music. What do you get the rap music lyrics in for? What's that about? Do you just want to have very long trials?
Well, I don't think that it drastically extended the length of the trial, Your Honor. I think that there
What's the point, though, of having rap music lyrics in a trial?
It's entertaining.
Oh, all right. Jury enjoyed it, played the music, and...
I think it's always helpful to add exhibits that corroborate what goes on in the trial testimony, Your Honor. I think that's necessary to prove it.
What do you mean corroborate? It doesn't corroborate anything.
Well, it demonstrates that
lyrics... because all this rap music is about drugs and murder and so on. That's why people object to it. They don't think the musicians are murderers and so on.
Well, there were specific references in these rap lyrics, Your Honor, to...
There are always specific references to drugs and murders. And
I was referring to Gary, to specific neighborhoods of Gary, to specifically linking them to their area that they were selling to white folks from Black Oak, another neighborhood, things like that. There were more specific ties than just the general, this is a rap song about about drugs. So I think that there was some relevance to it. It was written
by a
member.
But was there a question about where they lived?
About where who lived?
Well, you're saying the significance of these rap music lyrics is that it tied them to particular neighborhoods. Are they not their neighborhoods? I mean, was there a dispute? Did they say they live in Winnetka or something, or what?
No, I don't think there was that kind of a dispute, Your Honor. I think it was just simply an
attempt. So I don't understand. If there was no dispute about where they hang out, what their neighborhood is, what do rap lyrics that...
Well, there was a very concerted effort by the defense, especially by Mr. Dilworth, but I think also by the other defendants, to assert that CCA, Concord Affiliated, was nothing more than a rap group.
But if you play their rap music, you're corroborating their version.
Well, I don't believe that we were, Your Honor. I believe that what
I don't understand you. You say that the government didn't regard them as a rap group.
They were far more than a rap group, Your Honor. Some of the members of the drug gang.
Whatever they were, far more of. One thing they were a rap group.
So
what's the point of introducing evidence on an issue which is not disputed? They're a rap group in Gary, and you're saying that's what the lyrics show. But since there's no dispute over that, what's the point of putting that evidence in?
The rap lyrics definitely show that there were songs that were being written that were and videos in which these individuals were performing that were specifically tied to sophisticated drug dealing terms, that they were intimately involved in it, not just a rap group in general, but very specifically.
So you're
involved
saying
in
the
drug
other rappers
culture.
Don't use sophisticated; they use unsophisticated drug terms.
I think that some use more sophisticated than others, Your Honor.
Was there evidence which said that, you know, your average average rap group calls cocaine chicken, but these people are sophisticated and they call it cheese? Was there evidence like that?
No, the evidence was that these specific terms in virtually every line of the song are related to drug dealing. That was what the evidence that was presented at the trial. The objection was that it was irrelevant, and under the liberal standard of Rule 401 and 402, which was the only objection that we believe that they were. The defense is arguing that they weren't relevant because of the houses or the locations where they were found, but they're tied into the group. If they're written by members of the group, then I think that shows what the group is about and what
they
do.
Is it correct that Suggs was sentenced to life?
Yes, Your Honor. There were three separate trials of individuals involved in CCA.
But Suggs cooperated with you, didn't he?
No, he did not.
Suggs did not?
No, there were many individuals who did cooperate.
But not Suggs?
No, Bobby Suggs, Shante Suggs, and Aaron Davis were convicted at the first trial. Their convictions were affirmed before Blakely and all of that, so they're sort of in the McReynolds category. Bobby and Shante Suggs received life, and Aaron Davis received 405 months. There was another trial which occurred in front of Judge Sharp that is pending on appeal. It was argued right before Blakely was argued in June, has not been decided yet. So those were the three separate trials of the CCA members.
Let me just ask you about the sentencing. Now, is it correct that all of the sentences were enhanced in one way or another by judicial fact-finding?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
Now, I think Mr. Walaszanski suggested that Judge Bucklow indicated that she regarded Price's sentence as very harsh, suggesting that if she realized the guidelines were merely advisory, she would have given him a lower sentence. Do you have any comment on that?
I don't think that that's accurate. Judge Moody was the judge in this case, Your Honor, just as a clarification.
Maybe I'm confusing. Is that Davidson? Maybe?
Yeah. I actually think that the harsh... I apologize, I'll have to brief over here if I'm going to retrieve it, but... I believe that the defendant that there was some discussion of harshness about was Mr. Dilworth, I believe.
With Dilworth.
It's discussed in our brief that there is a footnote that they were talking about the harshness of drug dealing sentences. There was, I believe, also a mention that a life sentence is a harsh sentence, but I don't know that was just referring to the particularity of the particular defendant. I think it was merely stating the obvious. I mean, a life sentence is the harshest sentence.
But if these cases were remanded, we couldn't be certain, could we, that these people, that these three defendants would get identical sentences under the post-Booker regime?
I don't believe that, Your Honor. I think you know the government's position. Our position is under the third prong on the test. It's the defendant's burden to show a reasonable probability.
Right.
If the standard is going to be, is there any possibility these people could get different sentences, if that's the standard this court's going to impose, no, we can't meet that burden.
Okay.
Just a few clarifications. The defendants are talking about sentencing juries. We were ordered to file a brief in this case in September because there were non-Booker issues in the case. And in that instance, we did, in response to the sentence of the Seventh Circuit's Booker decision, suggest, as the court had suggested in sending the case back to Judge Shabazz, that perhaps a sentencing jury should be impaneled. We are operating, obviously, under a new regime, so we have not made any argument that should be done.
Right.
If the court is going to remand, we would just ask that the judge be given full range and discretion. Mr. Bosch raised some arguments related to Mr. Davison in terms of him being acquitted of the conspiracy. I don't believe that the Supreme Court certainly did not explicitly overrule United States versus Watson in Booker. And until it does
is it Watts or Harris that we should be worried about?
In the case of Mr. Davison, I'm referring to, Mr. Davison was acquitted of the conspiracy charge. And his sentence, therefore, started at a much lower level than his two co-defendants.
Right.
He starts at 27 to 33 months. The judge found, though, that he was a member of a conspiracy by a preponderance of the evidence and found, in any event, that he was individually responsible by a preponderance of the evidence himself for large amounts of crack cocaine dealing. I think there was some suggestion in the briefs from Mr. Bosch that because Mr. Davison was acquitted, that should not be taken into account. We believe that both under Watts and under this court's decision in Patterson in 2003, that is still good law. If the Supreme Court wants to raise the standard or believes that there is something wrong with 6A1.3, that the court should have said
something. But Justice Stevens has a footnote in his Booker opinion in which he... really seems to toss Watts out of the window, doesn't he? I mean, he says that the court hadn't considered, you know, the issues and so on, and it made it sound as if there was really very little left of Watts.
It's a somewhat obscure footnote, but I think when you consider Justice Stevens' opinion with Justice Breyer's opinion, until this court or until the Supreme Court or some district courts start enunciating what reasonableness means. I mean, I don't know exactly what relevance Watts does have, because in the case of Mr. Davison, he's subjected to two substantive counts with a range of 0 to 20 years. And under those circumstances, whether one finds by a preponderance of the evidence or not, if one can make a reasonable argument that because of other violent activities that he's involved in.
I think that's surely true. But that would be a matter, you know, discretion for the judge.
That's correct. I mean, I guess, though, that I don't think that in determining the sentencing guideline range, which still would seem to me to be a 3553A factor, there's going to be some question of, okay, here's the guideline range, and maybe post-Watts we think that now that's unreasonable, post-Booker, we think that even though Watts is good law, the range is high because we did found a lower standard. But I think that in determining that particular 3553A factor of what is the guideline range, I don't see that footnote as being a clear indication that we aren't supposed to do that.
If you look at Justice Breyer's, you know, separate majority opinion, He says this court's earlier opinions assumed that this system, he means the, you know, mandatory guidelines, would continue. That is why the court, for example, held in United States versus Watts. So Watts is being described as a decision that assumed the pre-Booker status of the guidelines. And if that assumption is removed,
well,
Watts...
I agree with that to a point, Your Honor, but I mean, I would almost think that if we were operating in a mandatory guideline system, one would think, which Watts is a very harsh and very right. anti-defendant ruling, whereas if the guidelines are not mandatory, as they are not, then, you know, so under that system, it was sort of perhaps somewhat surprising that the court in a 7-2 per curiam opinion says we don't have a problem with 6A1.3, whereas as I've been trying to explain, I think in an advisory system, there would be more reason to think, okay, we've got a guideline range, boom, here it is under Watts, we've set the range, and now looking at the other factors, maybe we need to go down a little, but not that we can't make the finding to create the range itself.
Oh, I think the judge can. I think the difference is that the judge is not required to do a preponderance analysis, and if he finds that the acquittal was erroneous on a preponderance standard, then jack up person's sentence. That's what he can still use his, you know, insight into that conspiracy evidence to.
It could be done either way, Your Honor. I mean, I agree that we could say Watts is out. They have to find beyond a reasonable doubt to set the guideline range, and then they say, well, hey, there was still a ton of other evidence
right.
of drug dealing, and ramp it up. But I think until the Supreme Court, I mean, if that's what this court feels, then it should direct the court to operate under that system. But I think until the Supreme Court rules, it can just as easily operate as, okay, we're still operating under Watts, the guideline range is high, and then the judge can find, well, right, but it wasn't beyond a reasonable doubt, let's ramp it back down.
It wouldn't be a big difference.
And I think since we've got Watts on the books, we should just say Watts still applies and let the defendant ramp it down, not let's assume Watts was overruled and ask the government or the district court to move it up. We're just going to be moving along a range regardless of which way we decide it. The Brady issue that was raised, Your Honor, I don't believe there was a Brady violation here. There was no immunity agreement with Mr. Lewis. As I mentioned before, there were three trials. The other trial, which was argued earlier, happened later, and Mr. Lewis stated he didn't have an agreement. He didn't have an agreement. The FBI agent, this is a large case. The FBI agent was asked many questions over a long sentencing, and I think either he got witnesses confused or he frankly just didn't remember. There were many witnesses in this case, not, I think, that testified in this trial, but in the longer Suggs trial, who did get immunity. And Mr. Lewis wasn't one of them. But even if this court wanted to assume, contrary to fact, that he was given immunity and that the government did something improper, there were so many other... I mean, Mr. Lewis admitted on the stand that he had sold crack, that he had used crack, that he had been convicted of other crimes, including crimes involving lying, that he had not been charged, even though the government was aware of all of these uses. So under the Simmental... opinion and some of the others. I mean, I just don't think that this had any impact. He was not. Kenneth Lewis was a witness that obviously helped the government's case, but he was not the linchpin witness or some saint who brought the government's case up to new heights against Mr. Dilworth. If the court has any further questions or wants mm-hmm. to discuss any of the evidentiary issues in depth, otherwise I would stand on the brief and just ask this court to. To let us, I can't really add anything else other than what I already have on the Booker issues. We would just ask the court to give us guidance soon.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Holland.
Thank you.
And the defendants, is there any rebuttal?
Very
briefly. Mr. Walashansky, yeah.
Thank you.
With regard to the lyric argument that this court had questioned counsel about, there were more than just lyrics. There were certain album covers, CD covers. The CD covers showed some members of this group of individuals on trial, some of them holding weapons. And we objected to that at trial because this was obviously a staged photograph for the purpose of simply marketing the record album. It was not there to show what they did in real life, and yet that's how it was presented to the jury. We felt that was... clearly irrelevant and certainly not material to the outcome of this case. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. Is that it from the defendants? Or Mr. Finn, did you want to say something?
One more thing.
Sure.
The other thing I wanted to point out, as it was just pointed out to me, is that in the third trial, the trial after Mr. Dilworth's, some of the evidence that we talked about was excluded for the reasons that we talked about.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much. And defense lawyers were all appointed, were they not?
Correct.
So well, the court thanks you for your efforts on their behalf, and thanks Mr. Holler also. So, next case for argument.